Miles, hit this one, Miles.
You are listening to The Business Called Cricket, only on Red Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this podcast show. It's a business called Cricket, where we take a deep dive into the game's economy and how the coronavirus pandemic has impacted it. I'm your host, Rika Roy. I'm a deputy editor with New Delhi Television. But on this platform, you will find me go beyond news to talk cricket and uncover some magical stories of the game, pre and in times of COVID-19 through its characters. My guest today is a man who has been responsible for keeping Dada or Sourav Ganguly's India fit. He has worked with some of the legends of the game. His CV reads Medical Coordinator, Head Physio Rajasthan Royals, Sports, Health and Fitness Consultant. Welcome to my show, John Gloucester. Such a pleasure having you here.
Absolute pleasure to be here. And thank you for listing me as one of the characters of the modern game. So, very happy to be here and happy to have had this involvement with cricket right through since the beginning.
You are a character indeed. John, tell us how your days of lockdown have been and what have your coping mechanisms really been?
Look, I think it's been the same as everybody. I think it's been a time of reasonably high productivity, to be perfectly honest. And I think it's given me, as it has a lot of people, the opportunity to do things that we've always wanted to do but haven't necessarily had the time to do so. And you know, I always talk about time as being an athlete's best friend. And we often don't have enough of it, whereas now we seem to have plenty of it. And it's how you use that time to not only improve your skills in your profession, but also to take those new practices with you post-COVID. And so for me, it's been a really interesting time. I've been encouraging everybody around me and particularly all the, you know, health professionals around me to sort of use this time to upskill in CPD, continue their professional development, and look at skills that are going to be more valuable to you in the post-COVID world. So things like mental health techniques, health and safety practices, frontline medical skills, quarantine hub management, nutrition, particularly nutrition and immunity, and upskilling in those areas. So, you know, I've been doing all those things. I've also in the last 3 months completed a diploma in football medicine, which was really interesting to
do. Very, very interesting.
And also just improving our skills in the online education space and knowledge delivery. So I've probably done, I reckon, over the last 2 or 3 months, probably 50 or more webinars.
Wow.
You know, information sharing webinars. So it's been a great opportunity. I've been very busy. I've also been heavily involved in the sports education space, as you know, through the Sports Village platform, which has allowed me to help educate that next generation about the importance of health, wellness, well-being and physical education.
Now, John, physiotherapy means you keep people fit and at the same time, you are fit yourself. But has the lockdown threatened to throw you out of your routine?
Again, it's probably the fittest I've been in a number of years. Because we've got time and it's really amazing. Yes, we've been limited in space, but fortunately in our building, we have some space downstairs. So there's been a real push. And look, a lot of this is on the back of the knowledge that, you know, the healthier you are and the fitter you are, the better you're able to tackle COVID should you unfortunately be stricken by it. And also to boost your immunity to help protect you from it. Become a, you know, at the fore of my day has been fitness and wellness and trying to keep physically active. And that's been the key messaging, obviously, back to our players as well, is that the fitter you are, the healthier you are, the better you're going to transition back to sport post-COVID, but also to protect you during this period as well. So it's actually been a big part of my day and my week has been running, shuttle running, home exercises, skipping. Yeah, lots and lots of things, but also a very deep dive into the nutritional practices as well, because I think you've got to look at both of them. When we're looking at immunity and we're looking at health, we've got to look at both the physical, which is the exercise component, and the nutritional side together. So it's been a great opportunity for me to actually be fit and take those practices to all our players as well and drill down into them around the importance that the more you can do now, the better you're going to be post-COVID on our return to sport and the best chances you've got of not getting injured. So I think that's a really important message for them.
Mm-hmm. You spoke about the nutritional practices and the importance of upscaling them. What exactly have you been doing from, you know, what you've done in the past? Because this is a time when cricket is at a pause, and all the more a reason the players need to keep fit by getting better nutrition.
Yeah. I think probably what I've done is I've taken control of the kitchen. And I think, and a lot of our players, that's been the message also to our players, and a lot of them have embraced that. Mm. You know, from Robin Lutipers to Baron Arons to Steve Smith, to all these guys have really embraced the kitchen, not just as a place to be creative and sort of, you know, to take their mind off things, but also to take control of their nutrition, and on the back of some information that we've been feeding through to them, I think that's been a really important thing. So for me, it's about, I've always been pretty strict on my nutrition anyway, but it's just allowed me to sort of take control of an environment that otherwise, again, we don't normally have time to do so. So the kitchen's become another domain that I've been looking at quite closely and working much more in, which has been fun, but also being creative. And also, again, as an education, that the nutrition underpins health, it underpins performance, it underpins recovery, but most importantly, it underpins your long-term health outcome. So this has been the sort of shift in our communication and our messaging to our players is, yes, it's important that we consider your short-term health. It's important we consider your performance outcomes and recovery outcomes for your sport and when we go back to sport, but most important, here's some information and some education and some upskilling around the long-term benefits of you embracing your new nutrition habits as well.
And how receptive have they been? I'm sure that you have been communicating to them. Have they been very receptive?
You know, I think in the world of sport, we talk about the one percenters. And, you know, what is going to separate you from the rest of, you know, your peers? These days, it's not necessarily the technical changes and things like that. It's coming down to these small changes in your practices, and your practices being nutrition, a key one. So most of them, if you can demonstrate a benefit for them, then in an area that they want to change, now that may be weight control, it might be in recovery, it might be in performance, then they embrace it because they can see very definitive positive changes. If you can sort of communicate to the player that this is probably the biggest way to separate yourself from the rest in the cricketing world or in the sporting world, then they're very open to it. And now that they've got the time to sort of do their own investigations, experiment a bit more with food, then I think you'll see, you know, post-COVID, a lot of these players taking a lot more healthier practices with them into the sporting world.
And will they also return healthier post-COVID? What is your idea about that? Because the game of cricket is moving in a direction where we see more and more fitter players. And, yes. And every country is emphasizing on fitness. Even the Indian and Pakistani cricket teams that were, you know, back in the days not that fit, even their emphasis perhaps is on fitness. Do you see them becoming even more fitter post-COVID?
Yes. And I think, you know, you're spot on there. And I think fitness is now a non-negotiable in elite level cricket. It's a complete non-negotiable, which is good. And I think the smart cricketers are going to be healthier after COVID because of this change in practice and embracing of new ideas, particularly in the nutritional sphere. So we look at it sort of, yes, nutritional practices, I think, will change for the better and they'll carry those forward and they'll be better because of it. The other thing that we're looking at is changing some of the mental health practices with our players as well. Again, this is another wonderful opportunity to look at that and look at some new mental health techniques for them. And using this time of crisis, we can call it that, using this time of fear, using this time of sort of stepping into the unknown as a really good kickoff point for them to develop skill sets to overcome that. Now, if they can develop those skill sets to overcome that in this environment, and I don't think they're going to face too many more challenging environments than what we're all facing at the moment. Right. Then they can take those practices into their cricket world with them, which I think is going to significantly better benefit them. So I think what you'll see post-COVID is a very different breed of cricketer. They'll be mentally better and have more mental strategies to deal with the game. I think they're going to be, and I'm talking from my knowledge of our players, obviously, I think they're going to be more respectful of nutrition and its value, And I think there's going to be more understanding around exactly how important physical health is. And that's not just in the context of being healthy during COVID, but also the role that it plays in separating them from the pack, so to speak, in the sporting world as well.
Right. So COVID isn't all a curse, but it could be cure as well for the players and for the society as well. That's what my understanding is from talking to you. But John, you know, when I look at these players today, when they're at a pause, there is an urgent need for most of them to be on social media to kind of convey to their fans, to their people, that today they're doing this, tomorrow they're doing that, they're showing different kind of exercises that they're doing, different advertising. Now, since you spoke about mental health, do you think that, you know, there is a worry this pandemic might make them, their celebrity status irrelevant, which is why, you know, they are in such a hurry to get onto the social media platform and display what they're doing so that the fan connect remains?
I'm not sure if a lot of that is a conscious, deliberate conscious effort for some or for most. Most have already have a very good understanding of the world of social media and the positives and negatives around that. I think it's just a natural extension of what we're all experiencing and a need to stay connected with the rest of the world and their fan base. And it's also an outlet. It's an expression. It's an outlet. And it's also a way for them to communicate, hopefully, best practices back to that fan base and to a greater audience. So I've certainly seen some of the contributions to the space, Instagram and some of these other outlets from our boys, and they've been very, very positive. You know, there's been some great positive messaging around fitness and health and wellness and mental health, and it's allowed us, you know, this new medium, so to speak, particularly this new medium that you and I are on now, and the webinar world and, you know, the Zoom world, has also allowed us to reach a greater audience with certain agendas and things that we feel are really relevant. Hence the three-part series that I just did, that I hosted recently with Rajasthan Royals and the Harvard Medical School, around mental health practices, particularly in sport, but also for the general population. So, you know, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. So I'm looking beyond the sort of the fan status, the celebrity status sort of side of it. I'm looking to how they've been using it to benefit the greater good, so to speak. So it's probably come to the fore more because it's really one of the only expressions they have at the moment. But in general, they've been using it very wisely and also very safely, which is great to see.
John, since you spoke about, you know, doing webinars for Rajasthan Royals, and I think this is a time when you had to keep in touch with your boys through the internet, through Zoom, has it been easy reaching out to them through the various social platforms? And without naming the players, could you tell us about some of the typical issues that people have addressed to you and, you know, you've been able to provide a solution for?
Yeah, look, players, majority of them are still training in some way, shape or form, you know.
So, oh, really?
Within the constraints of their homes, within the constraints of the various practices around the country and internationally. You remember
not
that
cricket training, but skill training they're doing.
Skill training, basic cricket training. Some regions have opened, like if you go into Surat and some of the other regions, some of them have opened up in areas. So they've been able to get back out onto the field as well. So we're still dealing with day-to-day injuries. And the internationals as well. Remember, we've got quite a large cohort of internationals that we have to access also. So injuries are there and niggles are there and, you know, they persist, and general health issues and nutritional issues. And, you know, so they're always to the fore. So fortunately, we have this medium where we can all get on and talk to each other face-to-face. They can physically show me their problems. So we still have this, you know, telemedicine, if you want to call it that, sort of practice in place. So in terms of diagnosis and treatment outcomes, they're pretty similar. We've been able to manage, you know, two or three players remotely, and one ended up, you know, having to go and get an injection done into a joint. We're able to manage that safely and appropriately and fix the problem. two or three others have approached, you know, with help on the mental side and steering them towards, you know, some really good mental health practitioners to help them with some issues. So we're seeing, you know, the normal types of things that you would probably see in day-to-day, face-to-face, you know, on-field sort of issues that we just have to be creative in finding a solution for them. Because at the end of the day, they still want a safe answer. They still want a positive outcome to their problem. So we just have to be flexible and creative in the way that we deliver those outcomes for them. So remote assessment is what we call it. And there was a recent British Journal of Sports Medicine have just put out a new article around treating in the current context of COVID. And they're calling it the tele-SEM, tele-sports and exercise medicine solution. So, you know, how to remotely assess and treat while still delivering a safe practice. So obviously it's through the format of telemedicine. So we're just using the existing telemedicine practices that have been in place for quite a while now and just, you know, using those in our sports medicine and sports physio world.
John, now, you know, everyone's hoping for cricket to resume sometime in the future, this year for sure. What kind of a biosecure environment would the Indian cricketers be happy with? And can you think of a city or a place where they can be put, where they could be mentally free and physically they could thereby exert themselves?
That's the combination that you've got to get right, is the mental freedom versus the physical freedom, and vice versa, the mental sort of lockdown and the physical lockdown. How do we find a nice place to accommodate every aspect of their game?
Do you see such a place in India?
Look, given the current context of where we're at with COVID, it's difficult to sort of to envision that at the moment. What I'm doing is I'm looking at best practices from overseas at the moment. And when we look at the current cricket environments that are being played and the sports hub environments that are being played around the world, so I've been looking very closely at the Australian Football League, AFL in Australia, and their quarantine hubs they have set up around the country. And how they're working. Obviously, looking very closely at the cricket, current cricket practices in England,
right?
With the Test series versus the West Indies. So we're able. The beauty about being the second mover here is we have the second mover advantage. Mm-hmm. If you get what I mean, we can learn the best practices from everybody else who's entered the sporting space before us. So where I'm constantly in touch with my colleagues who've already in that return to sports space, taking their best practices back to our sport, informing our franchise and various governing sporting bodies that I'm involved with around how to take them forward. So the hub, I think the quarantine hub concept will exist in the foreseeable near future, because it's all about safety and protection. And until we do have some sort of vaccine or some sort of treatment modality to successfully combat medically the virus, then it's difficult to not see a hub quarantine sort of facility playing out for not just for cricket, but for all sports. So in India at the moment, there are certain parts of India that are really well controlled and are doing a fantastic job at that. And we need to obviously learn from those. And, you know, like I said before, in Surat, we've seen some, you know, a lot of kids going back to playing academy cricket. And so, you know, we're good at learning these things. But when we're talking about a very large, you know, thing like, you know, the World Cup or an IPL or hosting something like that, then, you know, then it's very different, because logistically you need the venues, you need the space, but ultimately you need the safety. And, you know, at the moment it would be difficult to probably host something like that in India at the moment. None of us really know, you know, what's coming up, what's moving forward, what's happening. Unfortunately, we've got some really smart people who are looking behind the scenes all the time about how to run sporting events successfully. So we just need to wait and see what they all come up with. But in the meantime, it's up to us to be learning. Like I said, we need to be watching and learning all the others who are already back in professional sport and seeing what's working best. And when our time comes, which it will, taking those best practices and bringing them to our world of cricket as we know it.
So realistically, you think hosting IPL this year is going to be tough?
Again, it's one of those things where you just have to watch this space, and things are changing very rapidly. But there's been some wonderful precedent, like I said, already set in the sports world, hosting you know, large team events and multi-team events in various parts of the world. So I'm sure that the IPL organisers are constantly monitoring those and constantly surveying the landscape as to where would be the safest place to, if there was to be an IPL this year, where would be the safest place to have it? And obviously player and staff safety and obviously would be limited in terms of crowd, but ultimately it's the safety of the people involved that, that is paramount, and that will not be compromised at any level. So from a physio or a sports medicine practitioner who's working in this space, obviously our priority is to ensure the safety of everybody involved.
John, I'm really keen to know, since the players are in lockdown now and they haven't really played cricket for about 4 or 5 months, how long will it take for them to get back into action after they are put into a camp in a biosecure environment? How long ideally should this camp be?
Well, it really depends on the format that they're returning to. You know, what is the format of cricket that they're returning to? Is it test cricket? Is it ODI cricket? T20 cricket? Because that does determine, you know, time frames in terms of those transition time frames in terms of return to sport. So that's one factor. The other factor, I think there's probably three factors. So one is the format they're going back to. Two is what their role is in the team. Are they a fast bowler? Are they a batsman? You know, that does determine, you know, time frames also. Then it also is determined by how much they've been able to do in the lockdown setting, because that varies enormously across the country and around the globe for our players. Some have access to outdoors, like I said, up until recently in Bangalore, most of them were outdoors. In Surat, they're outdoors. In quite a few of the regions around the country where our players are from, they're able to practice outdoors because the lockdown restrictions are different around the country and around the globe. So it really is going to be done on a case-by-case basis. But the key determining factor will be what they've been able to do during the lockdown. And that will determine how long we need with them in terms of going back to sport. But, you know, if you're taking, for example, a return to T20 cricket for a fast bowler who's had a reasonably good lockdown, you're probably still looking at about 4 to 5 weeks, I think, about 4 weeks. But most of that preparation work can be done. And the biggest risk we have with these players is in high-speed running. And if you look at the data already coming out of the sports that have already returned, particularly AFL, EPL, the majority of injuries they're getting are in the lower limbs, in the large muscles, so quadriceps, calf, hamstring injuries. And that's purely because they haven't had the time to adapt to their high-speed running exertions, which is what we talk about in sport now. So that's where the injury risk lies. Getting the high-speed running efforts into the player as early as possible is going to be one of the biggest determinants around injury, I think. So we just need to manage them on a case-by-case, individual basis and look at those three factors, like I said, you know, what format they're going back to, what role do they play in that, and what has been their baseline. And then we can sort of work out timeframes from that.
John, you must have your eyes been on the test cricket that was the first test cricket match that was played post the corona crisis between England and West Indies, the number 8 team beating the number 4 team. How does the new normal look like to you?
Yeah, I think we all witnessed it, and I think it was wonderful. The lack of crowds, you know, is that going to be a big issue or not? That's one of the big questions that everyone's saying. Let's look at the IPL context. You know, not having a crowd in IPL, yes, will change the dynamic significantly. But the effect on the players is another interesting one, because the majority of the players are young Indian players, if you look at the squad, who would be very familiar with not playing in front of crowds at all, you know, for the majority of their careers. And also for new players who've never experienced IPL to come in, not having crowds may actually be a benefit in terms of performance, from a performance perspective, because there'll be no intimidation from the large crowds, et cetera, and the noise. And so, yes, it'll lose its wow factor if there's no crowds, but from a performance factor, I don't think we're going to see too much difference. And we saw that a bit in England. From a physical perspective, I think those players are really wonderfully prepared. Touch wood, you know, there was very little in terms of injury issues. So that was a wonderful thing to see. But returning to T20 cricket is very different than returning to Test cricket because of the way we have to train for T20 cricket and the speed that's involved in that game. You know, it's a 30% different in high speed running efforts in T20 cricket than there is compared to Test cricket. So we need to factor that in. But it was wonderful to see. They've been getting, again, watching the AFL in Australia where they're becoming very creative with AI, you know, sound, noise, background noise, crowd noise when there's shots and there's wickets. And some of the venues and people that I've known who've been at these venues say sometimes you almost have to look up to see whether you are actually in a crowd or not because the crowd noises are so good. And the appropriate, you know, cheering is so good. So the effect for the player will probably be reasonably similar, but maintaining the safety at all costs. So it's going to be another world and a different world, but I think it's going to be a really exciting world. And it's just exciting the fact that, you know, we're all going to get back to sport at some point. And I think we've all appreciated just how much we love sport and how much we've missed it. And I'm sure the audience viewing numbers around the Test cricket would have been phenomenal, as they were for the Bundesliga when it first came back, being one of the first leagues to come back online for football. So if you look at some of the viewership numbers, they've been phenomenal because people are starving for this wonderful game. And even from a camera perspective, when you watch the football, they're not projecting into the crowd so much. So they're just following the game, AI, crowd noise in the background. And the game is just being followed on TV, then there's very, very little difference for the viewing audience on TV. So, you know, we're going to be good at that, I think. And I think it's a really exciting time and we look forward to returning to sport and the players, I can tell you.
John, we've spoken about the sport's present. Let me take you back to the past, because the past has been really exciting for you. I would like our listeners to know how, you know, you entered IPL scenario and how did IPL happen to you. And you've been one of the unsung heroes of Rajasthan Royals, been with the team since the first season when it had a fairy tale finish, lifting the cup with a team. Yeah. People gave very little chances to. So tell us, talk us through that moment in time when, you know, you were picked up to be a part of Rajasthan Royals and what happened since?
Yeah, it's been an amazing journey when you think about it. And in fact, the whole journey of IPL, full stop, not just my journey within it. But, you know, I can remember when Lalit Modi first floated the idea, actually, to us when we were in Australia on the Australian tour 2007, 2008, when I was with the Indian team. And, you know, his vision and his plan and the BCCI's sort of idea around this and then being part of the initial team to help set up some of the medical sort of protocol side of it and then coming on board with Rajasthan Royals, you know, who've been an incredible franchise and a really wonderful ownership as well. So we've been very fortunate on that front. And then to sort of kickstart with a captain like Shane Warne, who I was familiar with, was probably, I think, you needed somebody really creative because not a lot of people knew about the sport at the time. And I had fortunately had the experience of the 2007 World Cup in South Africa and winning that. So I sort of came and the guys who were involved with that sort of came from a knowledge that, you know, this could be something really special. And it's a format of the game that we can all be ourselves and we can all express ourselves in different ways. And if we do it right, then it's something that we know is going to be, you know, wonderful for the fans. So we took that approach to 2008 in the let's have, you know, fun with this and let's really enjoy it and just see what comes of it. Because it was a bit of a learning experience for most and still was at that point in time. Certainly the 2007 World Cup experience was a huge learning experience for all of us because nobody had really played it at all before that format. And I often get asked, you know, what was the secret remedy, so to speak, about the success of that 2017. And the one thing that I always tell people is that fear is the limiting, in most cases, the limiting factor to performance. It's not technical or anything like that. It's normally just fear of failure and fear of the spectacle. And what we decided before that World Cup was we're just going to have fun and enjoy it and, you know, really just enjoy each other's company. When you put fun at the center of any equation, you push fear to the periphery. And so it takes fear out of the question. And when you've got nothing to fear, you've got nothing to lose. And so I think that was one of the key ingredients of success. I think Shane also realized that, that having fun and enjoying each other's company and being allowed to express yourselves and not fear failure at all was the recipe for success for that early, early stage. And then from there on in, we've just seen the IPL grow and grow, and what a wonderful beast it's become. You know, I think, and the contributions that it's given, like I said, back to world cricket and particularly to Indian cricket and the ecosystem around Indian cricket has been spectacular. Well, I've certainly been very fortunate to have been part of that journey from then till now, and taking a lot of those learnings into a very new world and a very new IPL, I'm sure, when it kicks off, you know, whenever that may be.
John, personally, you have been involved in two fairy tale finishes, one for India and one in India. One is the 2007 yes. 2020 World Cup, where you were part of, as you mentioned, as a physiotherapist, and the first IPL win of Rajasthan Royals. Would you say that in both these cases, fear was pushed to the brink and it was fun because of the fun that you guys decided to have, that you ended up giving a lot of fun and joy to the public?
Yeah. And I think that was the key message, was that ultimately this is about the fan and getting the fan engaged in this new form of the game. Because if you don't have the fan engaged, then then it'll fall by the wayside. So part of the strategy, consciously or unconsciously, was to get the fan more engaged with this format of the game. And that comes down to how you play it and the way you play it and the intensity that you play it at and the speed and all the things that we bring into it now. And they loved it. And so I think we sort of broke the mold there a little bit. It was also wonderful because when you look around that dressing room, you know, if you look at it from an international politics perspective, what a fascinating study of people and geographies, you know, to have a dressing room so full of different, exactly, you know, different nationalities. And, you know, I always say that sport's one of the best ways to sort of socially include people and bring people from the periphery back into the center. And, you know, I saw it in that dressing room in 2008 where, you know, when we won, you know, there were Indians hugging Pakistanis and Australians and, you know, South Africans and all walks of like West Indians. And what a wonderful world sport can be when we play it for sport's sake and have fun and enjoy it. And I think it's one of the greatest tools that we have for social messaging, positive social messaging and pushing really positive social agendas. So, you know, I've always been grateful for being involved in such wonderful dressing rooms and being able to sort of be part of that changing face of sport, not just in India, but I think globally.
John, how then will you use that learning of pushing fear to the brink and getting fun in the middle of what you do post-COVID times, when there will be no hugs, no high fives, no handshakes, to be able to, you know, help a team bring out their best performance and become the best that they can be?
Yeah, that's going to be difficult, but it's the relationships that you have in the dressing room, and you know, you talk about those environments where you can most control and where the best outcomes come from. And I think the dressing room sets it all up for you, and then the dugout, and then obviously on the field. So yes, we may not be able to have those, you know, those expressions, so to speak, on the field, but ultimately deep down, we all know why we're there, and we all know what we're all playing for. It, like I said, it's given us an opportunity to really take various sort of agendas that we've always talked about, you know, this whole idea of fear and, you know, what limits performance and the dressing room and particularly that one about, you know, comfort zones and removing oneself from their comfort zones. I remember Greg Chappell just doing a talk just recently, actually, that I attended, and he talked about, you know, the best cricketers in the world are the best thinkers, and those who are not afraid to remove themselves from their comfort zones. And the ones that, you know, remove themselves more often than others from the comfort zones are the ones that are generally more successful. So COVID-19 has taken us all out of our comfort zones. You've got to be honest. And so maybe there's going to be some good about that. And it's a bit like, you know, the old saying, you know, if you're the best in the room, you're in the wrong room. So you've got to challenge yourself, you know, to go beyond and get better, you know, to remove yourself from that comfortable environment and just keep presenting yourself with challenges. So I think, like I said early on, there's going to be a better form of cricketer and a better person ultimately coming out the other end of COVID-19 experiences. And I think we'll definitely see that on the sporting field.
Thank you very much, John, for joining us on this platform. And as you said, that this is a challenge that is going to bring out the best in the players. No knowledge goes waste. Perhaps this knowledge is going to make them better players and better human beings. You stay safe and stay well. Thank you very much once again.
Thanks, Rico. I really appreciate it. Take care.
You were listening to The Business Called Cricket, only on Red Podcast.